Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the show focused on actionable freedom tech and Bitcoin discussion. I know it's been a few weeks since our last show. As you guys know, Dispatch is audience funded. It's supported by viewers like you. We have no ads or sponsors. So I only really like shipping when we have an interesting conversation. I don't want to waste your guys' time. I don't have to like promise the sponsors, you know, three episodes a week. But we have a great show lined up today. I got a great show lined up for next week. I know vibes out there might be a little bit bearish right now. Today is Tuesday, June 30th. The current time is 1600 UTC. You'll be listening to this in a couple hours. I just immediately post it. Current block height is 956087. Bitcoin price is $58,300. Sats per USD is 1,714. Largest zap from last episode, we had Jason from Tondo on. Spending Bitcoin anywhere in Kenya was 10,000 sats from PGS Design. You can support the show or all the relevant links are at CitadelDispatch.com. Share with your friends and family. Search Citadel Dispatch in your favorite podcast app. I know money's tight right now, so if you can't spare the sats, single best thing you can do to support the show is share it with friends and family. Open up their phone, search Citadel Dispatch in their podcast app, click subscribe. They won't know what hit them. Next thing they know, they'll just have back-to-back episodes about Bitcoin in Africa, and they'll be wondering what their nephew did on their phone when they weren't looking. So thank you, freaks, for continuing to support the show. Anyway, I kind of gave you a teaser. Today, we're talking about Fediment. Specifically, we've talked about Fediment many times on this show, the open source project that allows anyone to create a multi-sig federation to make it easier to use Bitcoin in a freedom-oriented way. In the past, we've had more technical conversations about the open source protocol and the wallets that are being built out on top of it. But today, we're going to actually be talking about it being used in practice in South Africa. I have three guests to join us here. We have Eric Sirion, who is the creator, the man behind the original Fediment spec. How's it going, Eric?
Great. Thank you. Great to be back on the show. I think it has been quite a while that I've actually been here myself. Must have been at least 2 years.
We had you like right in the beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in the meantime, some other contributors joined and some great shows. Yeah, but it feels great to be back and thanks for having us.
Love it. I should have asked you how to pronounce your name ahead of time, but we have Joshua. Is that how I pronounce your name?
Yeah, that's about right.
He's a contributor to Fediment and has been instrumental. My understanding, you've been instrumental in the Iro integration. That makes it much easier to run these guardians in a...
I would say Joshua is the mastermind behind Fediment as it is today. Like, I got it started, but Joshua brought it to the point where it could actually be rolled out and deployed in the wild. So, yeah.
Legendary.
Done a lot
well,
of,
welcome to the show.
Lot of cool stuff.
Well, thanks.
And then we have, on the topic of mispronouncing names, we have Erman here from Bitcoin Akazi, return guest and good friend. How's it going, sir?
Yeah, it's going awesome, man. Yeah, we had the name conversation last time, but you pronounced it really well, man. Don't stress about it.
I'm working on it. So you guys are running a federation in the wild in South Africa now.
Yeah, we're doing. We've been running it for a couple of. In fact, it's the second one. The first federation we set up was a test federation, but the second one we set up is actually being used. I mean, I've been using it on almost a daily basis, and it's just it works insanely well. I still can't believe it. Every time I make a transaction, it's hard to believe that it just runs.
Kind of love
yeah,
that.
I've actually been using that one too, because sometimes, like some other federations, I might not have good connectivity to them or whatever, but surprisingly enough, the one in South Africa, it nearly always works. And that's just amazing to see it. Like the one that's being just run at home, it's super reliable.
Yeah. Yeah, so the one in South Africa, the new one that we're running now, it's a 5 out of 7 Guardian Federation. So 2 of them can go down, and I think that definitely improves reliability. So far, it already seems much more reliable than the 3 out of 4 one we've been running before that, just to test. Yeah. So
is that the largest? Is that the largest federation in the wild?
I think largest that we know of. A few first things that come together here. Yeah, first 5 out of 7 that runs exclusively on Start Nines.
That's so cool.
And first 5 out of 7 to run on Iro. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been a big thing, right? Is in the early days of Fediment, first you had to run them on VPSs, you had to run them on cloud servers, and there was also a DNS requirement. And a couple of the early test ones, you know, it became a kind of a mess, and mostly because of the DNS requirement, but also due to the complexity of running it on a cloud server. The Iro integration, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of tries to mitigate both of those friction points, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It makes it much easier to set it up because you don't have to touch networking at all. It makes it much more secure because everything is end-to-end encrypted with static public keys now. So you don't rely on like external providers to encrypt. It makes it much easier to like port and move the machine around because the public key just follows you. And you can now run it basically on any box that has internet. It's just going to find a connection. Yeah.
So I can just like have my like Start 9 running a Guardian in my pickup truck, and I can just like drive around with Starlink, and then I don't have to worry about anything.
Yes, exactly. So the Iro library in the background, it's actually very advanced networking. So it's gonna use all network interfaces that are available to it. So Wi-Fi, mobile, etc. And it will like switch between them and load balance over them automatically to always give you the strongest possible connection. So we have set up federations where Eric was on a mobile network in a lobby in Nairobi, I think, and that also works just the same.
I think it was across like three different continents. I was in the hotel in Nairobi, you were on the Starlink, I think in South Africa actually, and then another guy was in the US on like I think both a Starlink and some other connection. And it just worked perfectly fine.
Yeah,
that's really cool. And I mean, specifically, I guess, and that's an interesting point you made. So you have the larger federation, you have 5 of 7 instead of 3 of 4. With the 3 of 4, if two people went down, if two of the Guardians lost cell reception or whatever, the whole thing just ground to a stop. Like, you didn't lose your money, but anyone who's using a wallet connected to that federation just couldn't send or receive. And so 5 of 7, it means three people would have to disconnect. Three Guardians would have to disconnect for the users not to have access. But does that add additional complexity? Is there concern there? You know, you have like more, I mean, just more people. Like, if you have more people that you have to coordinate things with, usually that adds some element of complexity.
Yeah, and I would say that's probably the main one, the main reason why federations aren't larger right now, like just the coordination complexity. But I think over the long run, we will be seeing it pushed towards larger and larger federations just because it brings way better reliability and safety for users. But I think it's a good segue to like ask Herman and Yasha, like, what was your experience in setting up the federation? Like, you had to coordinate like 7 people.
What? I didn't do much. I think I was like tech. I was there as tech support, but they figured it out by themselves.
I mean, I think I mentioned this before, but I was very surprised by how straightforward it was. There's at least 3 people on the federation, who's 3 Guardians in the federation that, like me, are, you know, not technical at all. We like to experience pain, so we figure things out if we have to. But, you know, it's as close as you're going to get to, I mean, I was talking to people in Nairobi this weekend. I was in Kenya, and I was trying to describe how easy it is to set up, and literally anyone could do it. It is a bit of a coordination effort, so you gotta get people together to go through that. But it's relatively easy in terms of figuring it out. It's really, really quite straightforward. And I think it's also interesting that, I mean, we've got relatively unreliable internet here, and I've been surprised by how well it runs. I was expecting to have issues with making transactions on a regular basis, like at least a couple of transactions maybe not work, but I've not had a single Lightning transaction fail. Every single transaction I've made has gone through without a glitch. And we have some people that are not using fiber internet. I think there's three or four guardians that are not on fiber. So they're on some
what
kind
are they
of
on
wireless.
Mobile?
Yeah, either on mobile or wireless internet. So it's not a reliable connection, and still somehow it just works.
That's wild. So what does that look like? And, I mean, and just to confirm, like Erman's video is the worst quality out of all of ours on this call right now. He clearly has shit internet over there. So like, what does it look like in practice for this setup? Can you just like walk through what that setup flow looks to a guardian, to someone who is going to potentially set up guardians?
I mean, at the moment, I think the hardest part was actually having to sideload the Fediment application on the Start9. There's no one-click install button yet. But other than that, it was a click-through process. You know, you sideload the obviously you've got to install the Bitcoin node, and then you've got to sync that, which can be a little bit of a pain point if you have shitty internet. But I don't think that took longer than a week in the worst case. I did it in a couple of days. So, and then once that's done, you sideload the Fediment package. And then, you know, you have to pick a time where all seven guardians are kind of online and able to exchange their guardian codes. And you add that to your Fediment user interface. And that's pretty much it.
The codes are what, copy and paste through like a chat or something?
Copy paste into a chat. Yeah, you've got a. I mean, we did. We used Signal to exchange those codes, and that was about it. Other than sideloading the Fediment package, the most complicated part was not to get confused whose code belongs to who. I mean, that's about as complex as it is. So it really is at a point where just about anyone can do it. I mean, I think the most challenging part is maybe not even the internet connectivity, but keeping the thing powered on, because we've got power cuts as well from time to time, and so you'd have to factor that in to get some sort of a UPS
but you need,
battery backup.
As long as five of the seven have power, you're good.
Yeah,
it's three of the seven would have to lose power and not have battery backup for it to go.
And, yeah. I would say that's actually like the biggest selling point, because like Fediment takes on all the complexity of providing a very reliable service, like something where you'd otherwise be paying big cloud providers like Google or AWS, like big bucks to have high availability. It's built into the protocol. So it can actually run on less reliable hardware. Like all the nodes in a box or nodes running at home, they're not high availability fundamentally. But if you still want to keep like significant amounts of money on there, they need some way of ensuring this high availability. And that's exactly what Fediment gives you. And also one happy news, like you were a very early adopter in South Africa, so you had to sideload, but by now, like the version that you're running, it's all in the community store on Start9. And so it's not as cumbersome anymore. I think
you literally just pressed
on the cutting
the
edge.
App store.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I so just recently did that and it works perfectly.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify that as well. It's like the only reason he sideloaded is because we didn't want to wait 2 or 3 weeks after the release for it to hit the registry. Everyone else would just like download it from there and then it should be fine right away.
Yeah, yeah, by the way, I know it can be a mental burden, but I do think it's, I like how they made sideloading on Start9 a first-class citizen, especially with the vibe coding stuff. Like you can just have your clanker like make shit and then just pop it onto your start nine, which is pretty cool. The other piece there, so it sounds like it's relatively easy to set up, which is awesome. I mean, Eric knows from the very beginning, I thought the success of this project rider or died on ease of self-hosting Guardians, right? Particularly since it might become like a regulatory sensitive type of situation and you want like 1,000 flowers to bloom. You want to see more options, not less, for end users. The other pain point historically has been backups, right? I mean, when we've seen issues with past Fediments, my understanding was at least a quorum of them, you know, if it's 3 of 4 or 5 of 7, they needed to have their backups if something bad happened and they needed to recover the funds. How do the backups work in the Start 9 setup? Like, is it complicated? Like, what does that situation look like?
Well, you can use a like regular integrated Start 9 backups or the Fediment backup that you make through our UI. In both cases, the backups are static. So you do them once at the beginning, you put them on an USB stick or similar, and yeah, then you're done.
Am I right?
It's just a file, really, with a bunch of private keys.
Am I right that you don't need all 7 backups to restore? You would just need 5 of 7 in this situation, or do you need all 7?
Yes, of course. And in the worst case, to get your funds out, you would need 5 out of 7 backups. But of course, we recommend to backup every single Guardian once in case something happens to the machine. For example, like, you know, we run on like less reliable hardware, maybe even used hardware, to keep the cost down. And so you always would want to make a backup. And that for us in the first federation actually came in very handy when one of the Guardians mistakenly completely deleted his Guardian and uninstalled it in an effort to upgrade. And so we had lost 1 out of the 4 Guardians and the system was still running. But that's, of course, not a great position to be in long term. But yeah, rest assured, he still had his Start 9 backup and he recovered from that without a problem.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about backups, I think the usual case or the more common case is that like 1 or 2 Guardians are maybe affected by some hardware failure, outage, whatever. And then they can actually recover by asking the other Guardians for like all the history that happened to restore their database. And the system just comes back to full operational capacity. That's what Yasha just described. Like the worst case of, okay, everyone loses their database and then they have 5 of 7 backups. That gets you the money back, of course. But that's not the thing that we're usually optimizing for. Like the goal is, I would say, continuity of service. Like,
so what does that look like? So let's walk through the process. There's 5 of 7 Guardians running. The South African Federation, you know, one of them has a power surge go through their house or whatever. The box gets fried. They set up a new Start 9 box. They install the Fediment Guardian app. How do they... The Federation right now is still live. Like, people are sending Lightning transactions and Bitcoin transactions and whatnot. How does that restore process work where they have the other 6 are still online and that 7th person is trying to get back up to speed?
So once they have, you know, their new Guardian up and running and they see our UI, instead of, you know, like they would click the restore button. So the first thing you see, it's basically set up or restore. They click restore. They get a field to upload the backup file. They plug in their USB stick. They select it in the browser. They upload the file. They confirm. And then 30 seconds later, they are online again.
What if they don't have their backup file? Can they still restore from the Guardians, like Eric said? Or,
well, they restore the payment history from the other Guardians, but of course they need the backup file. The backup file is just a collection of private keys. If they are gone, you can't really participate
in this
system at all. Like, if you lose your private keys, we really can't help you.
So then you have to create a whole new federation in that situation, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, in practice, let's say you have like a 5 out of 7. And one of the Guardians completely loses their backup and their machine at the same time. and they can't recover, then you could consider like, okay, are we going to keep running what is now effectively like a 5 out of 6 and say, well, we still have like 1 fault tolerance and, you know, we're good to go for a while. Or are we really going to set up a new federation already and then, you know, move the users over in time?
Gracefully, yeah.
Yeah, we support that quite well. So you can go into the Guardian UI and you can configure like a shutdown date and a successor federation. And then the users are going to see a message like, hey, this federation is going to shut down on like July 31st. Please migrate your funds. Here's a successor federation. And they press one button and they join the new federation. That's how we
migrated. So they would like literally get a notification in the app.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
have
of course,
to tell them separately.
No, of course not. No, they get it like displayed in the app and it's a one-click join basically to the follow-up federation. We use that to migrate from our 3 out of 4 test federation to like the new 5 out of 7. That's how we did it. Yeah.
But that was, it was very cool to see some of the people that was on the previous federation that I hadn't seen in a couple of months when I saw them recently and try to get them onto the new one. It was cool to see how easy that kind of flow was, and because I wasn't sure how that was going to work. But it's cool that that you can do that from the Guardian side and just sort of migrate everybody over from one federation to the next. It seemed quite easy from the user's perspective.
There's a couple different Federment like user facing apps. Are most of your users using they're mostly using the Fedi app?
At the moment, we're using Conduit.
Conduit.
Yeah, that's a new wallet that I developed like specifically for South Africa. It's been in the app stores for like a couple of months. And we needed a new wallet for like some technical reasons. And also to go for, like a simpler UI. So Conduit is focused on being just a Fediment wallet, nothing else. And it has some features specifically for South Africa. So it does support the Money Badger QR codes.
Oh, awesome.
You can use it to, you know, pay Zapper QR codes and so forth. I've been in South Africa myself for like 3 months over the winter and was living in Bitcoin Witsen most of the time, where I developed the wallet while I was living on it every day. So I can say that the first federation that we ran, the 3 out of 4 one, actually also was quite reliable. I hadn't had a failed payment living on it in 3 months.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
And later I came to join you there actually and stayed together there for a bit.
Nice.
And it's actually really amazing how well you can live on Bitcoin in South Africa, and was a great trip. I first stayed at Witsen too, like Joshua, and then later I went to Hossel Bay and spent some time at Ikazi, and in both places. Like if you figure out like the tricks, like for example Money Badger, and like know where your local Bitcoin accepting shops are, then I would say you can probably 90% live on Bitcoin. And it's just,
I mean, Money
Badger
is insane. Like the amount of stores that you can spend Bitcoin at with Money Badger blows my American mind.
I mean,
maybe check when you get to there.
Yeah.
The only reason I still have a bank account is when I travel and I apply for visas. Proof of funds does not count if I submit the Bitcoin wallet screenshot. I've got to show proof of funds in a bank account. If it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't need a bank account. And I mean, Kenya is the same. I mean, I didn't take any foreign currency. I was in Kenya for a week. I didn't take any foreign currency with me, and I didn't exchange anything at the airport. I landed in the country with a Bitcoin wallet on my phone, and I left the country with a Bitcoin wallet on my phone, and I never touched the local shillings. I did bring one or two back for my kids for souvenirs, but other than that, I didn't really need them. So both South Africa and Kenya, I think you can pretty much get around anywhere with a Lightning wallet.
That's awesome. So, I mean, we were talking about like one person, if one of the guardians makes a mistake, you know, deletes their backup, doesn't have a backup, or, I mean, God forbid, like their house catches on fire or something and their box is down and their backup's gone, then you're essentially operating a 5 of 6. Obviously, my brain goes, okay, you got 7 people. The chances that one of them is a dumbass at some point is probably not that low. Mistakes happen, you know, people are living their lives, everything's going great. You're like 14 months in and someone messes up something. Now all of a sudden you're at a 5 of 6. So are there any technical limitations on size of these things? Like, could it be a 6 of 11 or something? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it would be an 8 out of 11.
Okay.
But that's technically completely possible, yeah. So the next federation size we would recommend would be 7 out of 10, because the moment you go from 9 to 10 guardians, you gain one more guardian that you can lose. So we recommend basically the sizes like 4, 7, 10, and the next one I think would be 13 then. So like a 10 out of 13. But right now it seems like 5 out of 7 is a sweet spot. Maybe in the future we're going to set up 7 out of 10.
Does it make performance worse the larger it is, because like they're all communicating with each other all the time, signing things?
No, doesn't.
Yeah. So latency doesn't change. Like, your transactions are still fast. Like, what might happen is that you consume a little bit more bandwidth, but it's very minimal. So I wouldn't worry about it. And the maximum
That was part of my first project that I did when I rewrote the consensus, like way back in the day of 2023. That was one of the benefits that fell out, that you basically have constant latency with the number of guardians. Yeah, it goes slightly up if you run, let's say, 20 guardians, but it's like negligible.
And we could actually run federations up to a size of 20. Right now, the main limitation is the multi-sigs. Like, the standardness rules around multi-sigs, I think, forbid anything larger than, 20. What would it be?
Because these are native on-chain multi-sig
transactions
that are back in the Federation.
But we haven't run any, or haven't seen any live federation of that size. So we did do some test federations that were that large and just played around with that. But and they perform well, but at some point it's hard to coordinate. So there are some ideas around just automating coordination, but that's something in the research phase now.
Also, the larger federations, they need to grow over time. You know, you need to like grow the social structure. So you could imagine that you have 2 5 out of 7 federations in the same region that have largely the same users. And eventually, you know, maybe they have lost some of their machines or some of the guardians want to switch out. They could join together and form a 10 out of 13 federation, for example. And both of them would then they could run these on the same start nines. They would then just set shutdown dates in the old federation, set the new larger one as a successor, and then the users would join the new federation.
And they could run them at the same time on the same start nodes during the transition?
That would be possible. We would have to ship a second package for that technically, but yeah.
And then
request, be able to run multiple instances of the same package at the same time. That would be so amazing.
Yeah.
on start nodes, like a feature request for a start OS.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You keep being very deliberate about the threshold, like the specific M of N. Does that is that a personal preference, or is that actually a technical? Is there a technical reason behind that?
There's a technical reason for it. So, at the lowest level, we use something which is called a Byzantine fault tolerant algorithm to establish consensus, and there is actually a technical result on the lowest threshold that you can achieve there. And 3 out of 4, 5 out of 7, 7 out of 10. And then the next one would it would be 10 out of 14, actually, I think.
Not 10 out of 14? Anyway, the one side goes up by 2, the other by 3.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, those are the lowest thresholds that you can achieve. Yeah. If we could choose them freely, we would maybe go for something a little bit lower. So like a 4 out of 7, maybe. But we can't. 5 out of 7 is like the lowest threshold that is technically achievable.
Yeah. So and the problem then, there is yeah, that like while you could still access your on-chain funds, there's no guarantee anymore that the Federation could agree on which transactions were actually confirmed or like what should happen. So it doesn't give you much benefit that, okay, you can still access your on-chain funds. It actually just adds more risk for users that someone could try to steal. So that's why we don't do that.
Got it. That makes sense. So then, I mean, there are obviously, it often gets compared in the same conversations, and there's obviously multiple differences between Cashew and Fediment. But one of the big ones that I think a lot of people don't realize is that Fediment is native on chain, right? So this is effectively like a multi-sig on-chain wallet. So then as a result, someone's got to run the Lightning node. I assume most of the transactions that are happening in Irman's Federation is Lightning transactions, or a lot of them are. How is that being handled?
So the Fediment project itself runs the gateway right now, and that's the one that we use to like bootstrap new federations. Yeah.
And is that used for multiple federations?
Yeah. Come again?
Sorry. Go on.
Yeah, just to explain, like the gateway is a service or a piece of software that connects a Lightning node to Federation. Just for anyone who hasn't stuck into Fediment too deeply.
Which is separate. It's separate of the Federation, right? It's like a service provider of Federations that provides
Lightning. It's a trusted service provider.
Yeah.
So we split the servers from the custody. So Federations are guardians. They are easy to run. You set them up once. Everything beyond that is completely automated. You just keep internet and power to the box, and then you're fine. Guardians are more involved because you do run a Lightning node. So it's like a continuous effort. And we split that, and then you have an M of N relationship. So you can connect multiple gateways to a federation, and you can connect multiple federations to the same gateway. So what we effectively do is, initially, when you have one federation, we bootstrap them with our gateway. And when they reach a critical mass in volume to warrant their own gateway, they can migrate over. Or maybe you have multiple federations in the same region that together reach that mass. And then they can spin up their own gateway and connect it to all of that. All of them. Initially, you could be running then their gateway side by side to ours. The guardians, the apps would use them then like randomly, basically load balance across them. If one of them goes offline, you immediately fall back to the other. So there's a nice fault tolerance there if you have multiple gateways connected to a federation. And eventually, we would just disconnect our gateway, and then they are completely separate from us.
And this is invisible to the users. If there's multiple gateways, they're just making a Lightning transaction. It's just working.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I actually had a question from somebody on that, and I wasn't sure if I answered it correctly. But the question someone asked me was, okay, if the guardians are very easy to run, which they are, but the Lightning gateway is more technical, and the likelihood of there's something going wrong with the guardian is pretty low, but the likelihood of something going wrong with the Lightning gateway is a little higher. If the Lightning gateway goes down, you're not necessarily disabled in the Federation. You can still transact amongst the people within the Federation, obviously with eCash, and you can still get in and out of Federation on chain. It's just the Lightning element. That was my answer, but I wasn't 100% sure about that.
No, it's right. Yeah. eCash and on-chain still works fine. And on the uptime question, the thing is that while the Federation runs on residential, where let's say you have like 95% uptime, which is not enough, the gateways, they run in the cloud just because of the Lightning node that needs to be running in the cloud. So they should have much better uptime, and then it kind of evens out there. Yeah.
So, yes. I mean, but there's no technical limitation on, could you not run a Lightning Gateway on a Start 9 as well?
Yeah, you can do it. And we technically support it, but there's inherent problem with Lightning that you just can't back them up well.
Yeah.
So that like limits you, you know, you really want to put like one or two Bitcoin in a hot wallet that runs on your Start 9. Probably not, but with a 5 out of 7 federation, that's completely reasonable. Like, federations are not made for small amounts. We have, right now it's still possible because the on-chain fees are low, but we really have two types of users here. We have the person that has their savings in an on-chain wallet, and then, so in a hardware wallet, and then they move it inside the federation, and then they spend it over Lightning, but they move thousands of dollars in value at a time. You know, assuming an on-chain transaction is more expensive. And then you have the other way around. You have the business owner that has one or maybe a handful of point-of-sale systems based on Lightning, and he collects Lightning payments over time and eventually withdraws on-chain $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 of value at a time. So you need to be able to save a significant amount or maintain a significant amount of value, like to yourself, significant amount, maybe like a year's worth of savings in that federation. And this can only be achieved on local hardware with the system being federated. So this creates a lot of technical complexity, of course, for us, which is also like where the vast majority of our like engineering time goes to. In practice, eCash is a very important part of the system, but it is something that was solved like 3 years ago. We still like run the same cryptography basically for that we wrote 3 years ago. This was done when I joined the project.
Got it.
In 2023. And since then, everything's been about like the federated aspect. So you get the data replication out of the box. Like for the people who run Lightning nodes, if you want to do a series setup, you like either run it in the cloud where like your storage there just gets automatically replicated, or you go even further and then you use like a managed Postgres with like data replication built in to build your Lightning node on top. Because if you lose that data, your money is gone. Yeah.
Right.
And we built that into Fediment. So the data replication is extremely important. Like your payment is not shown as confirmed before the transaction that you created is not replicated and stable on disk of 5 guardians. You don't notice it because we do it in 200 milliseconds, but it happens every time. And the other thing is, of course, the uptime. Like if you have a residential internet connection, maybe you have 95% uptime, maybe you have 97%. That's really not the percentage that we are shooting for with the system overall. I think if you do a payment system that people rely on, like in the two use cases I just described, where like people may run a business over it, you are really like in the category of like 99.9% uptime. But if you have a 5 out of 7 federated system where the individual nodes have like 95 or 97% uptime overall, you will get like 99.5% or higher uptime, assuming that they are like independent. Like if the entire internet of a region goes down, there's nothing we can do. But usually that's not the case, and we have individual peers or individual guardians that go down, but the entire system just works.
Yeah, so spread out your guardians so they're not affected by the same rolling blackout.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that all makes sense to me. So with the gateways, with the Lightning Gateway, so first of all, a lot of this comes down to trust trade-offs and performance optimizations. And the reason, you know, one of the coolest aspects of Fediment is that your trust is distributed like at the base of it, right? So it's 5 of 7. You effectively need 5 of the guardians to basically be malicious to steal money. You would need... you know, 3 of the guardians to be incompetent to lose money. So like you're distributing the trust, you're making it less likely that people have funds lost. But with the gateways, it's literally a single person, a professional running a Lightning node and managing liquidity and keeping uptime. What is that trust trade-off for the end user? Like if I'm receiving if I'm receiving, I don't know, $100 over Lightning through a gateway, in transit, am I trusting that gateway provider? Is that, that's a trusted relationship?
Sorry, I think we lost you for a second.
I still can't hear Matt.
Yeah, speaking of shitty internet.
Yeah. Reliability.
Yeah. And he's gone.
Okay, I see the video move again.
Oh, there we go. It's back.
I think you're back.
Yeah, I lost internet briefly, but the Fetterman stayed online.
Yeah.
No.
Did you get my question?
No.
So my question was, this all records locally, so they've heard my question. The listeners heard my question. What is the trust trade-off with the individual gateways?
Oh, yeah. So basically there is none, because the gateway is just an extension of the Lightning network into the Federation. And just like you don't trust any Lightning node on the route when you're sending a payment, you don't trust the gateway. They can either forward the money to the end user who receives it and then receive the incoming funds they are routing, or they don't do that and then they don't receive any funds. So the only thing you really rely on is them not denying the service to you. But that's in their best interest because they're making fees.
That was my other assumption, was that at some point you would probably see people who are good at running Lightning nodes that will offer gateway as a service and would want to connect to federations as a way of providing a service to federations. And because you're not really trusting the gateway, that's something that is an acceptable trade-off. You don't necessarily want to put yourself in a situation where you rely on federations to run their own Lightning nodes, because that is more technical. I mean, if I think about the use case on the ground here, it would be relatively easy to help a bunch of people set up a federation, but it's going to be a whole different story to help them set up a Lightning node and manage that.
It's a completely different skill set. Running something in the cloud than like running something on a like Start9 or like a different type of home server is a completely different experience.
And I think what we have seen is that Lightning in general has been moving more into a professionalized direction. Like the plebs running their own Lightning node at home and using that for all their transactions that was still big in 2021, 2022. But I think by now a lot of people kind of stopped doing that. At least when I go to conferences, I see many people using like World of Satoshi. Blink is great. Like, I mean, I saw a lot of people use Blink in South Africa.
Phoenix Wallet, you have Async Manager, Lightning Node for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a certain reason to make it a separate service that a professional can manage. And even if you want to manage it yourself, it's pretty easy to run your own gateway. So not to say it's actually hard. Like, we have Start9 packages. We have Umbral packages for that kind of stuff. But then you really need to be aware of the trade-off of running a Lightning node on Node-in-a-Box at home, and also spend the time actually managing that node, because otherwise your routing will not be good enough and you won't provide a good service to your community, and nobody wants that.
Yeah, and you have to have, I mean, the listeners, the freaks are very aware of running their own Lightning nodes and the mental burden and the financial burden that comes with it. I mean, it's not even just a technical thing, right? Like, you need to have solid liquidity. You have to lock up funds. You know, it's you're in a beneficial situation if you have more money at your disposal for doing that. If you try and run a very tight ship, you're going to have payment failures. So on the gateway question, this is, once again, I'm assuming this is like completely detached from end users. Is the Guardians choosing which gateways they bless? You mentioned that they could have multiple gateways. Like, are they going into like the Guardian UI and being like, I am adding this gateway, and then like 5 of 7 of them have to be like, yes, we're adding this gateway to the system? Or how does that look?
Almost exactly right. So they do go into the UI, they add the gateway's URL there, but it doesn't have to be
at least five for it to work. But so the Guardians, they can actually configure different gateways right now. Not ideal, but it would work. And then the client, it's going to use them in the, it's going to try the gateways in the order that they receive votes, basically. The more Guardians configure this gateway, the sooner it will be tried.
Yeah. And the idea is that even a single Guardian, if they notice all our old gateways that we had configured before, they're all offline. And the other Guardians aren't online right now. So they can just add another gateway unilaterally. And if that's the only gateway that's available, clients or apps will use that. And you can unblock your federation immediately, and then others add the same gateway too, so it gets more votes. But you're never in a situation where you first have to gather the whole team and have to vote on it.
That's awesome. That's clever. Yeah. I like that.
I had a different question as well. Sorry, I'm asking a bunch of questions, but it's not often I get the two of you together on one on one call.
Yeah.
I asked somebody from Fedi's marketing team, Mudibe, and I wasn't sure about his answer. But Fedi, the app, has a whole communications component to it. It's not just a wallet. And obviously, once you connect the Fedi app to the Federation, then I understand that the financial component lives on the Guardian machines. But what about the communications component? Is that still sort of like cloud-based and managed by Fedi, or does that also live on, does this become a community custody for finances, or does it become community custody for finances and communications once you're using the Fedi app on a federation?
No.
That's a great question. And yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat more involved on the Fedi side, so I will just take that.
Take it.
But so only the custody moves to the community-run federation. The chat functionality is still cloud-hosted. And the reasoning behind that is, so for custody, you actually, that's something where you want the trust to be local, right? Like, you can't outsource that without negative repercussions. While for the chat, it's encrypted with state-of-the-art encryption technology using the same protocol as Signal. So even though you're relying on a central service, the central service can't really see anything about your chat, and that makes it much more viable and made it a lesser priority to decentralize. But I would say the end goal is, and we chose a protocol called the Matrix protocol as the underlying, that it could be decentralized in the future. So I think the direction everything is moving into is decentralization. And I hope we will see even more decentralized solutions in Matrix. Like, what was the one MLS-based one called that?
White Noise?
White Noise, exactly. That's being pushed in Nostra space. That's really promising. And just, we need to mature these technologies, and then we can really embrace them, not have any single point of failure anymore. While for custody, I think federations are a pretty good trade-off and a pretty sweet spot. Like, for just building easy-to-use Bitcoin wallets that users can be confident in, that they can hold large amounts of money. And I think that just Fedi just fills a space in the trade-off space that was underexplored before. And I personally really like it. And I think with being able to show how easy it can be to transact and still have custody in your community, many other people will get to appreciate it too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's awesome. I got back from the Nairobi conference 2 days ago, and I spent more time talking about Fediment at the conference than I did about speaking about my own project. So it's, I think it's fantastic, because it really is a kind of a sweet spot. Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like it was really necessary to have something there. And trying to explain to people that you wanna bring, and another thing is, like, in these types of communities, trust is often a very different kind of trust. Looks very different. The trust between people looks very different. So it's totally fine. I mean, people, it's not unheard of for neighbors to trust each other with bank details and PINs and ATM cards. You know, you're living on top of one another, so it's not unheard of. And it just kind of feels like there's going to be a lot of use case for this kind of setup where you have these, you know, community trust models that sort of, it kind of feels like it naturally fits into the social setup that you already have.
And when, like, I was thinking about Fedimint in the beginning, like, my biggest fear was if we got hyper-Bitcoinization tomorrow, then most people would actually go to the big banks and just keep their Bitcoin in JP Morgan Chase or whatever their bank is right now. And that would just be a horrible outcome, in my opinion. So finding pragmatic ways, like, that might not be pure from a Bitcoin's perspective, like, because back in 2021, when Fedimint was starting out, like, I was kind of scared to get tarred and feathered for even bringing up the idea of not being fully self-custody and like finding this trade-off there, like just acknowledging that we could have a trade-off and it doesn't have to be black or white. But I think over the years, turns out there might actually be something interesting about it. And yeah, I'm super happy to, after like working for 5 years, to see it out in the wild and people use it day to day. And like, it's just amazing. And lots of learnings on the way. Definitely.
I mean, it's definitely worth the trade-off because there's so many benefits that come with it that you wouldn't otherwise get. It gives you a unique set of benefits. So it's definitely, I mean, it is a trade-off, but everything in life is a trade-off. And the benefits that you get for it is definitely worthwhile considering for a lot of use cases.
Yeah. And generally, how I think about federated applications, like we're building a federated eCash platform here, but generally most centralized services that you can build, you can probably also build in a federated way, while that is much less easy to claim about a fully decentralized implementation. Like, there's a lot of problems that are just impossible to super hard to solve in a fully decentralized way, and many people are trying. And like, that's what's happening in shitcoin land, basically. Like, they're trying to solve a lot of really hard problems fully decentralized and end up with basically a federation with extra steps. So it's all comes down to, yeah, they have a multisig. While if you're just honest about, hey, we have a multisig here, then suddenly you get a lot of freedom to implement a lot of cool features. Like, one thing, for example, Fedimint is a modular architecture, so you can just extend it, which makes it, for an engineer like me, it makes it really cool. Might be too much nerd talk, but the functionality that Fedi built is a way to stabilize your Bitcoin in the Federation against like another asset like the US dollar. Like, I wouldn't do that. I don't think the US dollar is particularly stable. It goes down all the time. But like, if you have a more shorter time frame that you're working on, then it makes sense, like, for a shop owner, if they want to keep their proceeds or like their income in USD because they have to restock pretty soon, then they can do that with Fedi. And there's a module in Fedimint that allows you to hedge your Bitcoin exposure and basically hold a synthetic USD. And that solves the problem for real people. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, the other thing,
we lose Matt again?
No, I don't think so. I was going to say the other thing.
No, I'm here. You guys are just running, so I'm enjoying the conversation. Continue, Armand.
The other thing that I noticed that is really cool is that you can't. There's no better way to do this. Is, I mean, you'd be surprised how much attention people pay to fees in a setup where the transaction amounts are really, really small, you know, and you might be paying less than a dollar for most of your transactions. People pay attention to fees. And I mean, you can, as if you've got several people transacting between each other in a community and they're all on the same federation, you're sending eCash back and forth. There's literally zero fees on those transactions. And the only other way to do that is to onboard people to like a fully custodial wallet, like Wallet of Satoshi or Blink or whatever, and then sending transactions between each other in that wallet. And obviously the trade-off between those two It's way better to have zero fees sending one another eCash on a federation setup rather than onboarding people all to a fully centralized custodial wallet to cut down on the fees. But because the moment you're sending transactions over the Lightning Network, people do start noticing the fees. And they may be really low, but if you're talking about very, very, very small transactions, people do pay attention to that. It was surprising for me at first to see that, but that's definitely a worthwhile consideration.
Not only that, you also have incredibly strong default privacy guarantees, bringing financial privacy to people that, you know, maybe would not be able to afford it otherwise. Yeah. On the fee piece, I actually have a technical question for you guys. So the whole federation is based on-chain Bitcoin, and presumably, particularly this South Africa example, I think is probably a great example because a lot of Irman's users are probably, you know, they're sending $5 Lightning transactions. All of this stuff is getting presumably at some point settled on chain. Is there like an automatic mechanism that is like combining UTXOs in the background so like the Federation doesn't end up in a situation where they have a ton of tiny UTXOs and then on-chain fees spike and then they're in? I mean, this almost happened to Coinbase in 2017 when on-chain fees went up. Coinbase had like 600,000 small UTXOs or something that were prohibitively expensive to spend on chain. Have you guys thought about that? How is that handled?
Yeah, absolutely. So not to go into it too much, but Hermann and his new federation, they're running a V2 generation of modules, which especially in that regard work different. We're going to talk more about the V2 modules at some later point, not right now, because they're being still rolled out and we, you know, prefer to talk about stuff that we have already done. But the federation that Hermann is running runs a wallet V2 module and it actually consolidates on every single peg-in into the federation. It immediately consolidates into a single UTXO and then it issues eCash to the corresponding to the exact increase in the federation's UTXO wallet. Yeah, so it's only ever one. The federation only ever has a single UTXO in their wallet.
That's fucking awesome.
The big benefit of that is that you can always make the user who made the transaction pay exactly the fee that they cost the federation. Like what we want to avoid is that we kind of have to socialize the fees that we're paying for on-chain. Like you could do like way fancier things if you allowed that, but then it's just impossible to do that fairly. Like there will always be some exploit where someone can just they give the federation a lot of small UTXOs basically and then drain the fee pool. So with this new version, what we're doing is just anyone who is doing any on-chain operation, they are paying the cost that it takes the federation to either consolidate the UTXO they're sending into the one UTXO the federation holds or the fee to split it into like the amount that the user wants to receive and the change that goes back to the federation.
Yeah.
So everyone's always paying for their own fees.
Yeah. And we also wanted an option that has zero config and zero management, especially. And if you say, okay, we allow for like multiple UTXOs, then you kind of, to do it well, you need to manage that. And basically, for example, if the fees start to rise, you would have to take a look. And then you would have to do an educated guess, like how the fees are going to develop and what your user behavior is going to be. And if it makes sense to consolidate some of the UTXOs now, otherwise you might end up in a situation where the fees have risen significantly and some of your UTXOs are not economically spendable anymore, or just in a situation where like users have to pay 10-20% of the on-chain value that they're trying to transfer in fees. Yeah. So to avoid all that and really have a setup that has zero management, the most reliable option is immediate consolidation into a single UTXO. That's also why it was chosen. Like, we need to keep in mind that people, they install a Fediment on a box and they, like, it's either start 9 with remote access or it's like a regular PC and they unplug the monitor, they put it in the shelf and then it just runs there for like months and years uninterruptedly, besides like an update now and then, similar to Bitcoin Core. Yeah.
No, that's clever. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I mean, it goes to reason that that would probably, I mean, especially as it, because it's automated, the lowest on-chain fee burden possible for the Fediment. Short of like actively managing things, how is there like a confirmation time expectation? Because obviously sometimes fees spike, but like if you're willing to wait 6 hours or 12 hours for a confirmation, you can get away with much cheaper fees. Is there a technical limitation there where you need quick confirmations?
Yeah. So because it is a shared, like the UTXO is a shared resource, we can't have any user's federation, any user's transaction just pending there for like 12 hours because they wanted to save on fees. So the federation is going to tell you the minimum fee it expects, and that should always be the one confirmation estimation from the Bitcoin Core node that they're running. So there again, we are erring on the higher side, safer side. Yeah, so we will never have the absolute lowest fees of like someone that would batch transactions, maybe RBF them if they estimated the fees too low, or it hasn't confirmed like after 2 hours. We always require enough fees to have the transaction confirmed, like probably within the next block.
And I think when you assume that.
I was gonna ask a clarifying question there, or maybe just on behalf of people at a slightly less technical level of understanding. This only applies to on-chain transactions, whereas Lightning transactions are obviously not, has nothing to do with that single UTXO, because the gateway is essentially just swapping its own eCash for sats back and forth as transactions come in and out. It's only on-chain transactions into the federation that gets consolidated into that UTXO, obviously.
Yes. And the cool thing here is that in a way we are batching all these Lightning transactions into like one large on-chain transaction eventually. You can imagine, for example, a federation gets set up and the gateway deposits like 0.1 Bitcoin into the federation, and now the users are depositing. And after a while, they have deposited 0.08 Bitcoin into Federation. The gateway is slowly running out of eCash, and you notice, oh, we have all these Bitcoin in our Lightning channels now, and we are lacking eCash. Let's rebalance. And then they might send 0.05 Bitcoin from their Lightning channels via something like Bolt Exchange to the Federation and get more eCash. And then that's how they rebalance. And that's how the Federation also gets more on-chain Bitcoin into its wallet. That's in the end backing all the user funds. So the gateway has some float. They exchange between eCash that's backed by on-chain Bitcoin and their Lightning liquidity. And then if it's a net inflow, then over time they will have to deposit on-chain just to get more eCash to swap. Yeah. And what I want to say about the on-chain discussion, like my belief is Bitcoin will be successful, and it might take many years to decades, but eventually Bitcoin will be so successful that most people don't really do on-chain anymore. Like we will have to find other ways of transacting for day-to-day. And so I think what we really need to optimize for is, yeah, good layer 2 support, like finding ways of batching transactions and only going on-chain when absolutely necessary. So that's, I think, very much in line with not optimizing for having the lowest on-chain fees too much, because we probably only have reasonably low on-chain fees in the short term, not the long term. And I think we lost Matt. At least I don't see him anymore. So much for the good internet.
Yeah. I think it's recorded. It's recorded locally there. So afterwards, he'll be able to
catch up.
I guess we can just keep chatting while we wait for Matt to rejoin. Yeah. But I was kind of surprised by the number of people I spoke to at both the Prague conference and the Nairobi conference that's kind of familiar with Fedi, the wallet app, but have no idea what eCash is, or that eCash actually you know, predates Bitcoin, and that it was something that was kind of picked up by Bitcoiners and applied in a way that the creator did not maybe foresee. Well, obviously didn't foresee when he came up with this idea. And that's why I said I spent more time talking about this than my own project at the conference, because outside of a small sort of group of people that are, you know, obsessive with this type of stuff, there's a lot of people, it needed some explaining of what exactly is eCash and where does it come from and so on.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, do we really need users or people to understand what is eCash? Like, for the longest time, my philosophy has been that if we don't have to explain, we shouldn't. Like, if it just works and people can just use payment apps as a more convenient way of interacting with Bitcoin, then that should be good enough. And we don't have to bother them with, hey, there's this new concept, eCash. It gives you this great privacy. They're getting it anyway. Why explain it to them? And then when they want to get additional benefits or when they get deep enough, then they will learn, hey, if I use this eCash stuff, then I can actually also send Bitcoin just like a chat message. Like the conference in Croatia recently, I did a little experiment. I just sent some eCash notes on BitChat, and whoever claims it first, they get the sats. And I want to see how many people will get online with BitChat. And that's something unique to eCash. You just have money that's data. And it's really cool, but for the average Joe who just needs freedom money, needs to be financially empowered, I think it's too much. Like, the more you have to explain to get started, the harder it is to get people to actually use something. So I think the gradual approach makes a lot of sense of not overloading or not front loading too much.
Yeah, that is one of the coolest features of eCash, though, is that you can literally encode. It's literally a string of code, and that is the eCash. It took a while to get my head around that, but that is one of the coolest things, that you can literally send it like you would give someone a physical fiat note. You can literally send this code over a chat message, and it's like sending cash over an internet connection. It's one of the coolest features. There were people that was encoding eCash notes into emojis, and that became a little bit of a game at some point in our local WhatsApp chat. That was quite fun.
Yeah, like what I did at a few conferences, I printed paper eCash. And like, I think Kalle did it first, so props to him. But just having some physical voucher that you can hand to people, and you can make it look like real money, like some old US dollars or whatever. And it's just a super cool way to onboard people. They just scan it, they receive their sats right into their wallet, they get onboarded to the federation that I choose, and it's just very smooth.
And I think also, like, the people not being aware of eCash, it's just a testament how big this space has become. Because, I mean, Cashew has done so much publicity work about the topic. You know, I can understand that people are not familiar with, like, what a federated system is. But there was so much talk and publicity about eCash as a concept. But the space is so huge these days. Like, you can run into full-time Bitcoiners and they have vaguely heard of this. Yeah.
And that's what winning looks like. More options for users, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, this has been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. I love what you guys are building. Should we, before we wrap, let's finish up with some final thoughts. We'll start with Erman. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I think that I was talking to Frank the other day, and I do think that Frank Korver, it's not an overstatement to say on my part that I think Fediment is probably going to be one of the most important technologies in Bitcoin going forward, just because it creates this system where you can have an acceptable trust model. I see it as an acceptable trust model. I think a lot of people maybe have a problem with that, but in the environment that I'm in, I see it as an acceptable trust model, and way better than a fully centralized trust model. And it's going to be very necessary to have these types of systems where I feel okay onboarding somebody to this. I've always had a funny feeling when I onboard somebody to a fully centralized wallet service, no matter how good the experience is, it's kind of like, do I really want to do this? But that's kind of like the only option. Whereas now, it's a way more comfortable feeling to onboard somebody to something that I think is an acceptable trust model, but still has a really great user experience. So I think it's probably one of the most important technologies going forward.
Love it.
Yeah, maybe onto Herman's point. It's like the Feynman project is as much of a social experiment than it is one as a technical one. We put a lot of new technologies together to like get to this point and make it work. Like Iro, for example, which now even only makes it viable to run on Start9, has just only released their 1.0 like 2 weeks ago. And now really the question is, can we form like the social structures around those systems that, you know, make them work for like communities, everyday people and so forth. Yeah.
Love that.
Which
Eric,
is for me kind of out of my hands. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It is a social problem. Those are the hardest ones.
Yeah, to tie back to something you mentioned in the beginning, bear markets are for building, and more than ever before, we have the need to fight for our privacy, fight for our freedom. Join us. And thanks for having
Love
us
it.
On.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. It's an honor and a privilege. Freaks, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. We'll be back next Tuesday. I got another great conversation lined up. All relevant links will be in the show notes. All relevant links for the show are at CivilDispatch.com. Share with your friends and family. Search Civil Dispatch in your favorite podcast app. Thank you guys for joining us.
Awesome, dude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Cheers. Love you all. Stay humble, stack sats. Peace.